Hello and welcome to Virtues of Peace. My name is Hope Elizabeth May and I'm joined by Michael Buzzy, Randy Olson, and very special guest, Dr. Songcheng Li, who joins us from Ohio at Findlay University. Dr. Li has recently published a book on one of our favorite individuals, who is Hum Sok Han, a Korean philosopher, poet, democracy activist, and peace activist, who we are going to introduce you to today. Our last show was on the March 1st movement. This was we did this on March 1st, and we began that show with a couple of quotes from Hum Sok Han. So that's a sort of connecting thread between the last show and today. And Hum Sok Han did participate in the March 1st movement when he was a young man. So we're going to introduce you to Hom's philosophy and as well as Dr. Li's work in this really interesting book, Hum Sok Han's Si'al Cosmopolitan Vision. And what Dr. Li does is provide an interpretation of Hom's philosophy and then argue that it is a very useful framework for theories of cosmopolitanism. And so that's where we're going today. And so welcome, Dr. Li. We're an honor to have you as part of Virtues of Peace today.
Thank you for having me, everyone.
Yeah, it's just so great. And I also want to say that today we're doing this show because Hom's birthday is coming up on March 14th, just in a few days. And today is March 11th. And I just also want to mention that today is the 10-year anniversary of the Fukushima disaster in Japan. And it is also the 101st birthday of another person who's near and dear to us, and that is Ben Ferenz. And Dr. Li, I know in your book you mentioned the International Criminal Court, and Ben Ferenz is the last American prosecutor from the Nuremberg trials. He's still alive. He's 101 years old today.
Wow.
Yeah, he's amazing, and he's a peace through law activist, and his whole life has been devoted to creating a peaceful world through law and through the criminalization of aggressive war. He's an amazing person. I just want to acknowledge him on this day. So I think that, Hum Sok Han and Ben Ferenz are kindred spirits in a way. They find themselves in different circumstances, but here we are talking about Hum Sok Han today. And I just want to talk about how you were first introduced to Hum Sok Han. A lot of people don't know about him, even in Korea, I think.
Right.
So just talk about that moment where you were exposed to him. What were you exposed to? What was the context and what happened?
Yeah, just for me to explain about Hum Sok Han, my encounter with Hum Sok Han, I think I need to bring out the old stories of my youth, because it's all connected. So, and I have to talk about my religious life as well. This is related again.
Awesome.
I just want to go back to my youth age. I was born into a traditional Korean family. I don't think we had a specific religious traditions, but we sort of practiced folk religion, shamanism, but not devoted religious family. So, but we, from time to time, we practice Buddhism. You know, my parents sometimes visit Buddhist temples. So we're sort of like religious people, not quite religious people. So it's like sort of in the middle. Most Korean people would do feel the similar, you know, unless they're devoted Christians or devoted Buddhism. So when I was introduced to a Christian church when I was a middle school student, I was very amazed by the fact that the message from the gospel. So when I heard the message about the God's love, especially God loves and cares about me, it was very that was a very important moment for me. So I think this is fascinating. You know, someone loves me, but the creator of the universe loves me. It feels really good. I thought I was, you know, cared about. You know, I'm being guided by a higher power. So it was really good, even as a young person. So I enjoyed the Christian messages. I go to Christian church with my friends. So I loved it. So I was educated in, I would say, Presbyterian community in my youth life from middle school and high school. So I started loving the message of Christ. They just want to do something about it, right? So for preparing college education, I had a lot of plans. I want to be working for a theater. I want to be a writer. But at the same time, I have a passion for doing something for the church. So I probably was thinking about becoming a pastor or theologian, missionary, something like that. So I the university associated with the ministry work was an option. So I actually eventually applied for the university, but not the regular university. The Korea doesn't have a seminary. They have seminary, but they have graduate school, like in the USA. But they also undergraduate institution focusing on Christian ministry. So my university, Asia United Theological University, so it's based on evangelical philosophy. They offer different majors related to Christian church. So I majored in theology. I loved it, but it was 1990s. So I maybe sophomore year, I started feeling some sort of like a dissonance, disconnection between what was happening in society and what I was learning from the schools. So all the classes kind of boring to me. And also I believe my theology, the schools were somewhat isolated from the rest of the society, because, you know, physically the university was isolated from the society at the time. So it was a beautiful area called Yangpyeong. So I think the most beautiful areas in South Korea, I think. So the campus was good. I had good friends, good professors, but I feel some disconnections. Although Korea, I mean, we democratization successfully done. So after 1987, established democracy pretty much. So we were happy about our political conditions. So, but 1990s, 1991 and two, there were a lot of problems in private educational institutions. We need reformations within university institutions. So there were issues college students were fighting over in the 1990s, but our university is all about theology, the preaching the gospel to the end of the world or something like that. It's good, but I feel unsatisfied. So there's one time, it was probably 1990, probably 304, I took a history class. And I don't remember the professor of this, because he was a lecturer. He was not a professor at university. So he was teaching history of Korea, Korean history. But he, his teaching was based on Ham's paradigm of interpreting history. So I was introduced to Ham's works and his philosophy through that particular history class, 1990s. So I was very shocked by by this person. So I never known this figure, but that was the moment when I got to know about Ham Seok Han. So I was very amazed by his creativity, especially in utilizing Christian narrative for interpreting secular narratives. So he was very effective in making biblical narrative relevant to our contemporary society. So I saw the very positive possibility, that Christian church can do something positive for that society in general. So that's the moment when I got interested in Ham Seok Han. I really enjoyed his writing, the Queen of Suffering in Spiritual History of Korea, his magnum opus. So he was amazing. So I started liking him. So I didn't study Ham Seok Han immediately, but Ham Seok Han was always my favorite. So that's the encounter, my encounter with Hamsa Khan, because I had a desire, strong desire for active participation of the Christian Church for society. Mm. So this Hamsa Khan did the right thing. I mean, so he was a cool guy also. He looks really cool, wearing yeah, you know, white beard and wearing traditional clothes always. Wherever mm-hmm. he goes, people mm-hmm. call him, oh, he, this guy is a mystic. He's not an ordinary person. Where did he come from? Anybody, everybody would ask the same questions. So he's mysterious. So I wanted to learn more about him. So I just hold it. But later, I just bring it back. I started studying. I restarted studying him 3 or 5 years ago. So I presented papers to international conferences, especially American Philosophical Association. And also I presented papers to American Academy of Religion regional conferences. I wrote some articles on Hamsa Khan. So, that's a kind of brief summary of my encounter with Hamsa Khan.
Wow. So it was the book, The Queen of Suffering. And I'm assuming you read that in Korean, not the English Queen of Suffering, correct?
Yeah, never in English. Yeah. It was in Korean.
Yeah, because at least the Korean version is so much longer than the English translation, Queen of Suffering. And so I'm sure the English translation is omitting quite a bit. That's just a wonderful book. I've read The Queen of Suffering in English. And the last sentence of that book is something that we've said on this show that I mention in my classes repeatedly, which is... Mm-hmm. Put your sword down and think hard. And I just, to me, yeah, Ham reminds me also very much of Socrates. So we'll get into more of him. I just wanted to, go back to this moment where you say as a youngster you learn about the gospel and that God loves me and cares about me and that was like, a sort of transformative moment for you. And we're going to get into, Ham is known as the Korean Gandhi. And you mentioned, Ham is always wearing, a traditional hanbok, and Gandhi also, would just wear like traditional outfit. And there's some sort of connection going on between Hamsa Khan and Gandhi. And I've written to you about this in email that I think also so similar here is the use of the nonviolent wing of the U.S. civil rights movement of the gospel. And in particular, Howard Thurman, who makes a pilgrimage to India and writes this book called Jesus and the Disinherited, talks about how this thing, like this idea that God loves you, that this insight is so important to the disenfranchised and does something in terms of like uplift and give a human being a sense of dignity and value when otherwise it's not really forthcoming from the world. I just wanted to make that connection. I couldn't help but do that.
Yeah.
Anybody else want to chime in about Dr. Lee's encounter and this. And the other thing I want to mention also is that when I first went to, I didn't really understand the importance of Christianity in South Korea. And as we were talking before the show, Namgong Lee Sung-hoon, who's really important in making the school that Ham goes to eventually, Osan School, was also, very much impacted by the gospel and was a Christian and so forth. And in the North, and, Pyongyang was like this cradle of Christianity. We'll get into that. And so one thing that struck me when I first went to Korea is I just like all of these crosses everywhere. And then I started to learn about the history of Korea and the importance of the Christian church in exposing girls to reading and writing and education. And so it's maybe that's something that's new to some of our listeners, but yes. Anybody else want to chime in with, go ahead, Randy.
Yeah, sure. It's a brief comment. Most of what I have is about the philosophy stuff later, but I wanted to just make a comment. Dr. Lee mentioned that when you were growing up, your family didn't seem to have a tremendous like the religious element of life was something that was peripheral. It was something that you guys did, but you didn't grow up in this like a family where there was this right way to think, right way to believe, or at least that's the impression I got from what you said. And I'm drawing attention to that because that strikes a chord with me. It's very much like what happened in my life, and sure enough, that we'll call it a lack of attention in that domain brought forward all of this energy later in life, so that you and I both are went down a track where we chose to study religion in a very serious lifelong way as a result. And then Hamsa Khan ends up being one of the bullet points on that path for you much more than me. But I'm really really looking forward to seeing how this kind of unfolds, because it sounds like you and I have been on a similar road.
Yeah, so one thing I want to add to my story. There was a cultural conflict, a religious conflict within my family. So the conflict was very subtle, but it's very impactful, I think. So when I converted to Christianity, right? So I converted to an evangelical Christianity, which is very conservative. So the problem is, when I get back home, you have family members who not practice Christianity. They, for example, the Korean people, they have a traditional religious ceremonies, right? Kind of mourning services for ancestors, right? So they have, for special day, they put tables, they put fruits and food. They commemorate the ancestors, and they sort of like communicate with ancestors, and outsiders would say, hey, so Korean people, Chinese people, Japanese people, they have ancestor worship, something like that. So it can be a considered religion, but that's a part of the traditional folk religion, Confucian tradition, also the shamanism. So my family was doing that, but I was a Christian, so whenever they have to bow to the ancestors, sometimes I feel isolated or disconnected because I can't join it. Sometimes I reluctantly join bowing to the ancestor, but I didn't feel comfortable at the time. So I have a perception because of the church educations from Presbyterian community. My family members were the people I have to save as a Christians. So I have a sort of like a missionary goal toward my family members. You know what I'm saying? So that's a kind of it was not a problem at the time, but later on it became a kind of, in a sense, sort of like a traumatic experience as a young person. You feel like you're separated from your parents, and you sometimes I despise the culture of my parents or my family members. So there's a disconnect connection. So I didn't know how to manage the cultural conflict, the religious, the conflict. So there was nobody who thought about it. So later, Hamsa Khan, the reason why I love about him was because he has some brilliant ideas, ways to synthesize. So that's something I was interested in too. I'm gonna probably comment on it later.
Yeah, so just one last like leg on that. So like nowadays, like if there's a Jaisa festival or ceremony happening in your family, like would you still feel like ostracized from that, or has there been some kind of convergence between these ideas for you?
Yeah, I was at the, in the past when I was young, right? But right now, I'm just I enjoy it. I just get there. I might bow, so but I don't feel any difficult. So I embrace my family, so I don't feel any disconnection with my family right now because I changed. I've changed. So I
Yeah,
would say,
that's wonderful.
right. So, but that's because, but the process, of getting to know this method was not easy process actually. So nobody taught me because I figured it out myself through books and through a conversation with the people of different cultures. So it was very hard experience. So, but I thought, now I'm thinking it would have been nice if I had a good mentor, or if I were guided better, right? Through the church community, probably we would have been better in getting along each other.
Amazing. So yeah, I hope you say more about how Hamsa Khan helped you in that journey of a greater acceptance and belonging. But let's also just get some facts out about Hamsa Khan. Like, when and where was he born? And can you share one or two formative episodes from his life, Dr.
Okay.
Lee?
So, can I give you a brief summary of Hamsa Khan's life? Very brief.
Please.
Yeah. Ham was born in on March 13, 1901, in Yongchon, a village called Yongchon, which is currently part of North Korea, and 2 hour north from Pyongyang if you drive by car. And he's for those who know anything about Hamsa Khan, he's a very important figure for the intellectual history of Korea. So he had a lot of titles. I would say he's an independent movement activist. He was an educator, mentor, historian, philosopher, religious thinker, political commentator, journalist, poet, translator, and one of the early Korean Quakers. So his influence is immense, immense intellectual community. But I would say there are many people who don't know much about Hamsa Khan. This is something we have to work on. So he's well known to intellectuals in Korea, especially people with progressive thoughts. He was a prolific writer. He left a lot of writings, essays, books, and newspaper articles, and. So he was born into a humble farming family, but his father was a self-educated herb medical doctor. His community was very peaceful, humble but peaceful community, with no sign of social tension and hierarchy. He was very happy about his community. He mentioned a couple of times in his essays. So a very peaceful community. There's no rich people, extremely rich people. There's no extremely poor people. So most people are in a similar level. I think he would say the CL level. So people are similar. They're not, the area is not wealthy area. It's not area. It was not the area which was respected by the people. So probably a small community, and he loved his town. And in his youth, he was fascinated by the Western religion Christianity because he was introduced to Christian faith by his relatives, his father's line, uncles and cousins. So he started learning Christian faith earlier, even in elementary student stage. So, but he liked about the fact that Christianity, brought the advanced knowledge, right, of the West. So he enjoyed the Western learning through Christian learning. So about I don't exactly remember his age. Probably his age of 10 or 11, or 10, 10, 11. He participated in March first nonviolent independence movement. He just supported the movement, but he had to quit the school, his public school, because the school he went to at the time was public school. So the school principal wanted to discipline him, so he had to promise, he won't participate in this type of activity anymore, if he really wanted to keep learning from that school. So he quit the school. Later, he joined the Osan School. Dr. May mentioned Osan School is very important educational community for Ham. Why? Because Osan School, he met the most important figure in his life, Yoo Young Mo, his life mentor, who would have later a tremendous impact on the rest of his life. So Yoo Young Mo was a teacher. Yoo Young Mo was also a great teacher, intellectual for Korean community. So I'm going to have an opportunity to talk about Yoo Young Mo later. So he learned from in the Osan School, and through the teaching of Yoo Young Mo, he learned about the Christianity history and the Bible, also the science in the conversation between Western thoughts and Eastern thoughts, because Yu Yongmo loved it. So he learned syncretism, syncretistic approach to the Christian teaching from the Yu Yongmo's wisdom, I think. So around 1923 or 4, he decided to go to Japan to, study further to become a good educator. He attended Tokyo College for Teachers. I don't know the exact English translation for this school, Donggyong Godung Sabom Hakgyo. So he went there, he majored in history, he graduated at the top of the class, actually. So he was very smart. And in Japan, he met Uchimura Ganjo, famous theologian, religious thinker in Japan at the time. He learned from him non-church movement, pacifism. So he joined his Bible meeting with other Korean students in Japan. So at the time, he met very important people for his life, lifelong friends, Kim Kyo-shin, Song Du-young, Yoo Seok-dong. So he studied together with them under Uchimura Ganjo. So he pacifism, also non-resistance movement, and also non-church movements, the ideas were inspired by Uchimura Ganjo. So he mentioned Ganjo quite often in his writings. And he came back to Korea in about 1928. He taught at Osan School. But he couldn't stay longer because of the Japanese authorities. So he was arrested and imprisoned multiple times for his involvement in and false accusations of doing independence movement. So after independence, he moved down to Seoul and continued to teach, giving lectures to the public, especially in YMCA. And later on, he faced the Korean War in 1950. So during the Korean War, he said that he got to know about the Quakerism, Quaker church people, their philanthropism and their pacifisms. And so he started loving the idea of Quakerism at the time. So later, he spent most of his life on fighting injustice caused by dictatorship and military regimes from 1960s onward. So he inspired a lot of progressive activists, democratization activists in 1960s and 70s and 80s. And he died 1989. He was nominated twice for Nobel Peace Prize by the American Society of Friends. Mm-hmm. So eventually, President Kim Dae-jung, he received the Nobel Peace Prize. But earlier, Ham Seok-gun was the one who was recognized by the international community for his pacifism, his contribution to the democracy mm-hmm. and the peace movement, I think. Mm-hmm. So that's a brief summary. And Professor May asked me to point out two probably formative episode of his life, I think. I think there are a lot of dramatic events in Ham Seok-hun's life. His life is more dramatic than actual, the movie narratives. So, but I picked two. I would say pick two. One is his experience in the great Kanto earthquake in Japan that happened I can't just name exact time period. So right before, so he went to Japan 1923. So the Japan Kanto earthquake occurred probably in 1923 or 22 or something like that. So right before his education in Japan. So at the time, a lot of Japanese were killed. All right, about 140,000 people died because of the earthquake, and reportedly, about 5,000 or 6,000 Korean people were massacred by the Japanese militia. Right, it's not necessarily the government, but the people who started searching scapegoat. So, and there were a lot of conspiracy theories in Tokyo, Japan area. Some people say, "Hey, Korean people, they try to burn the Japanese houses, taking advantage of this natural disaster," because it's, Korean people were troublemakers in Japan, and some rumor about the Korean people, you know, putting a poison into wells in the town. So the people were just, you know, driven out, you know, just beat up by, and then sometimes killed. So many people die. This is something that needs to be further studied, I think. So the Ham Seok-hwan was in that event. So he said, I almost died because people try to search, you know, Korean people on the street. So he, for some reason, he was arrested by the police. So he spared, he was, his life was spared because of the police arrest. Ironic, but so he, it was very traumatic experience for Ham Seok-hwan later. He talked about. To me, it sounds like it reminds me of Tolstoy's experience of his witness to the public execution of the criminal in the city of Paris, right? So he said later, Tolstoy said it was traumatic. He it had a great impact on his perception about the state, right? And then ignorance of the people and the, you know, atrocious atrocity of the ignorant people. So Ham said it's a very traumatic experience. He thought about it later and more, right? When people are led to ignorance, and especially when you, I think Ham felt that this connection with the Japanese community. I think he real started realize, I'm not part of this community. I'm an alien. I'm a stranger. I'm a visitor. Right? I'm not part of it. When something bad happened, I can be easily scapegoat. So he realized that, you know, some immigrant people, they realize even today, 21st century, whenever you are, it doesn't have to be people of color. You know, even you know, or the Caucasians, whatever race we represent, you, or if you're a minority in a community, you can sometimes realize this kind of, you know, this connection, dramatic through dramatic events. So Ham founded this, and he later he talked about this quite often when he articulating when he articulated about the enlightenment of the people. Right, and also when you talked about the idea of the community, right, embracing as many people as possible. So he, it was a very important event for him because he first felt he was alienated, felt alienated from the place he belonged. The second event was I would say 1940, 1942. About 1940, 42, he was imprisoned by some accusation of being involved in independence movement. Because of his writing, probably, and he stayed in the prison 1 or 2 years, 1.5 years probably. He, at the time, he read a lot. Especially, he said, "I read many Eastern classics. You know, Tao Te Ching. You know, the Great Learning, Buddhist sutras." So he enjoyed the readings of Eastern traditions. So all, yes, he read quite a lot the Bible, but he could intentionally explore the wisdom of the East. So he later recollect it was a great moment. So the prison was not a bad thing. He said, quote, it was a university of life. So he had a lot of reading time.
Yeah, I
So
love.
those two were transformative episodes.
Thank you. Yeah, just on the prison university bit, I think also, yeah, we were talking about Namgong Yi Sung Hoon before, said something similar about
Really?
it. And yeah, he just kept reading the Bible over and over in prison. And the other fascinating thing is, again, like Gandhi comes up. So Gandhi, and this is how I learned about Ham Seok-hwan, by the way. So this is like, I'm feeling, yeah. The moral energy is descending upon me. But Tolstoy wrote a book called The Kingdom of God is Within You. I think this was published in 1893, banned in Russia. It caused Tolstoy to be excommunicated from the church. And Gandhi was given this book, The Kingdom of God is Within You, by a Quaker named Samuel Coates. And Gandhi, it's one of the books he mentions in his autobiography that sort of like impacted him greatly. And so there's a Quaker that's giving Gandhi this book by Tolstoy. Mm-hmm. And he didn't really read it until when he was in prison. This is Gandhi. He read it twice, the second time in prison. And then it really impacted him. And it was actually this story that I was having with my student, Pak Kwangik, who was the student at the Graduate Institute of Peace Studies in Namyangju, South Korea. He's now doing his mandatory military service, as most South Korean young men have to do. As you know, Dr. Lee, the law now allowing conscious objection, that's a kind of historic law that was passed by the Supreme Court of Korea. But he is doing his military service now. But he was the one who, you know, gave me Ham's name in this context. We're talking about Korea, this Korean Quaker, because I was saying a Quaker gave Gandhi this book by Tolstoy. The point being that, you know, reading in prison is this valuable thing for these activists. I just wanted to underscore that. And I also just wanted to underscore when you talked about this moment in Ham's life, because we talked about March 1st on our last show, Ham participates in it and he has to go apologize to his, to be clear, it's like this is during the Japanese colonial period. And so the schools are run by the Japanese.
Right.
And they, you know, they require him to apologize. And he says, no, he's not going to do that. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to, it's not like these are Koreans. This is the Japanese colonial period doing this to him.
Right. All public schools were run by Japanese authority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And thank you for mentioning these two formative periods, the Kanto earthquake. And one thing that I really love about your book, and that is coming out when you're talking about these episodes, this notion of belonging. And you use this word and this sort of like this evolution of our sense of belonging. And what I'm hearing you say is that like Ham, as well as Tolstoy, have this experience of like being an outsider and not belonging. Mm-hmm. And this is like a very painful thing that sort of establishes itself in Ham's psyche. And as I understand it also, his really like turning to Quakerism, which is really, you know, they call themselves the friends, everybody belongs. I think it's the essay Kicked by God, where he talks about how he eventually went to a Quaker meeting, and that was because he was having some problems and all of his friends sort of turned away from him, and the only people that would like be with him were the friends, the Quakers. Mm-hmm. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, right.
So this sense of belonging and like not belonging, yeah, this is a really important thing for Ham indeed. And I think for all of us, I would say. I'll just stop talking and open it up. Go ahead, Randy.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about Tolstoy, and I would be remiss to not make a brief acknowledgement of his essay or his writing, Confession, where Tolstoy's spirituality and religious identity are most completely unpacked. I think, you know, Kingdom of God is Within You is like the grunt work, so to speak. And then it all comes to a head in that book, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, it speaks directly to this point about feeling ostracized, but not from any particular community, but from existence itself. Right. So that's kind of what that book explores. And I just wanted to throw that in.
Forlornness, the existentialists talk about. Yeah, so great. So Michael, go ahead.
I have just found it extremely resonant how many parallels can be drawn between the life and experiences of Hamsa Khan, sort of, like you had said, Hope, individuals who feel ostracized from their community, and then they all end up in jail at some point. What had really stuck out to me, it seemed very similar to Martin Luther King's Jr. experience of being in prison, his letter from Birmingham jail, that there's something really powerful about individuals like this, getting that space of quiet, and their sole focus, given that they can't do anything else, is just to read and to learn. And I found that to be very interesting, that that is something that they find extremely formative in their lives.
And also the this very traumatic experience is very negative feelings, right? But at the same time, it can be resources for a positive turn. So we're going to talk about it later when it comes to the idea of CR. This was the moment when he must have felt the CR with his life, right? You have to be at the bottom. So you have to have experienced the bottom. Otherwise, you can't probably, it would be hard for me to understand the nature of CR, the idea of CR. So this is definitely a CR moment for him.
Right. And so, yeah, we're about to get to the CL philosophy. And last thing, I would be remiss if we didn't point out again that Ham is known as the Korean Gandhi. And that's basically why, Dr. Lee, why is he known as the Korean Gandhi?
The reason why is not because Hamsa Khan promoted nonviolence activism for democracy, anything like that. But he loved Gandhi. He talked a lot about Gandhi, and he loved the philosophy of Hinduism, Hindu Indian culture, actually. So he was the one. He was probably maybe I'm not correct, but he's one of the people, earliest people who translated Bhagavad Gita. I think he was the first one. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think so too.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the Mahatma Gandhi was inspired by the Bhagavad Gita. He used it a lot, quite often. Mm-hmm. And Ham did it too. He mm-hmm. saw the common philosophy in Hindu philosophy. For example, the idea about the unity between Atman and Brahman, right? So Atman can be considered a seer in a sense. So Ham talked about Atman too, right? The soul, essential self, right? The seer is the essential self. So Ham used Gandhi quite often in the public lectures. So, and also obviously he was pacifist. He promoted non-resistance activism against the violence. And he was influenced by, as I said, Uchimura Ganjo. He promoted non-resistance and non-violent movement. And as you said, when talking about Gandhi with his relationship with the Tolstoy, Ham was inspired by Quakerism, by Quakers, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And he learned a lot from Quakerian community. He visited the USA through the help of the Society of Friends. Mm-hmm. So, and especially for his philosophy, the CR philosophy is about the philosophy of the mind, of philosophy of consciousness. So if you want to change society, we can do a lot of different kind of things, but he's the main point was about the awakening of the soul. So which you would, bring in physical transformation later naturally. So he quite often very explicit about nonviolent resistance. One example, when he talked about the Korean War, right? He quite often, many times, if someone from North Korea, North Korean soldier, try to kill him with the bayonet, he would say, "I would have to embrace bayonets if I really follow the core of the gospel." But he was not sure whether he could do it, but he said, "This is the duty we as Christians have to do. If you want to be transparent and honest and authentic, if somebody wants to kill you, just you have to hold, I mean, embrace and welcome the bayonet." Mm-hmm. That's what he said. So this is quite a common way of talking for harm. So people know harm is pacifist. And then also the because of this pacifism in fighting injustice in Korea, especially Korean political life, it was criticized sometimes by a progressive group of people in Korea. Some Korean community, progressive community people, they would argue harm was too soft, right? Mm-hmm. Right, too idealistic. Now we got to do something about it. We got to physically do something to change that reality. You can't just, you know, your talk about pacifism wouldn't lead to anywhere. So like a conflict, tension between within the African-American community in the civil rights movement, right? There are two different options or a strategy or approaches, right? So Korea had the similar experiences, and Ham was a great guy, intellectual, and he's a guru for many progressive people, but he received a criticism from the more radical activists, you know, who wanted to fight, physically fight, the dictatorships and corruptions.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you for that. And so to remind our listeners, Dr. Lee has written this book. It's titled Hamsakhan's Sial, and that's spelled S-S-I-A-L. Sial is what we've been talking about. Sial, cosmopolitan vision. And so we're going to talk about this word Sial. And as you have been saying, this is a really important notion. And so what's the mean? That's a Korean word. What is the meaning of that in Korean?
Right. Sial, the literal, it has two components. An easier way, if I have to explain an easy way, the Sial can literally mean grassroots. Mm. Or C means seed. All can mean kernel, a kernel. Right. So the Sial means the seed or grassroots. Right, so this term, the word, is not familiar with the most Korean people. If you know something about Hamsakhan, Yoo Young-mo, liberation theologians' works, you probably know. But if you don't know much about them, probably even as a Korean is sort of like unfamiliar terminology. So the CR. The word came from actually Yoo Young-mo's interpretations of a passage of the Great Learning, which is Confucian writing. Mm-hmm. So the Yoo Young-mo, he interpreting one particular passage from the Great Learning, he sort of created a new word, his own word, CR. Right? Mm-hmm. So. He used it with the Korean philosophy, in the philosophy of a Korean alphabet. So seed means seed. R, as I said, R mean kernel. But don't worry too much about seed. But Yoo Young-mo focus more on R. If you see Korean alphabet, I mean character R, it has three components. One is a circle, right, on the top. Circle is a placeholder for a vowel. It means heaven for Yoo Young-mo. So your circle, round, right? It symbolizes heaven. And in between you have a dot. Dot means earth for Yoo Young-mo's interpretation of that word. Dot means earth. And the bottom consonant, in Korean character, we call it lir. The bottom consonant means movement, actions. So heaven, earth, movement means the whole of life. Mm-hmm. So entirety of life. The CR represents completeness of life. Mm-hmm. So as a unit, CR is the building block. As a concept, it is a fundamental state of awareness that makes life life. Mm-hmm. As a sociological term, is the people placed in the bottom. Bottom here means the original state. I often use the John Rawls, you know, original position. So it's not quite the same, but it's mm-hmm. interesting to compare mm-hmm. our awareness of the basic conditions in thinking about our positioning, you know, in social mm-hmm. relationship interactions.
Mm-hmm. And so you have this quote on page 55. You have it in both Korean and in English. And I would like for you to just read it in Korean first, if you can, and then read it in English.
Okay.
If we would be so lucky.
Right. In Korean, here it goes. 민중이 뭐냐? 씨알이 뭐냐? 곧 나다. 나대로 있는 사람이다. 모든 옷을 벗은 사람, 곧 알 사람이다. 알은 실, 참이다. 임금도, 대통령도, 장관도, 학자도, 목사도, 신부도, 군인도, 관리도, 문사도, 장사꾼도, 죄수도 다 알은 아니다. 실제는 아니다. So in English it goes, what is the 민중? What is the CR? It is myself. It's the self as I originally am. The person who has taken off all the clothes, so-called the person of Ao. Ao is the seed and the truth. The king, president, minister, scholar, pastor, priest, soldier, official, waiter, businessman, prisoner, and all are not the seed nor the substance.
Thank you. And we've been talking about Tolstoy, and we have this other quote that I think will help us perhaps understand the meaning of CL. And so, Michael, could you read that quote?
Certainly. The quote begins, "Before I am emperor, soldier, minister, or journalist, must say to himself every man of our time and of the Christian world, before any of these, I am a man, i.e. an organic being sent by the higher will into a universe infinite in time and space in order, after staying in it for an instant, to die, i.e. to disappear from it. And therefore, all those personal, social, and even universal human aims which I may place before myself and which are placed before me by men are all insignificant, owing to the shortness of my life as well as to the infiniteness of the life of the universe, and should be subordinate to that higher aim for the attainment of which I am sent into the world."
Thanks for that. So, Dr. Lee, is that similar, or what do you think of that quote?
Very similar, very similar. So you sort of like, you have to get off your labelings, right? Mm. Physical labelings and social labelings, whatever labelings you got, you have to take off your clothes. Ham Seok-hun calls clothes, right? Mm-hmm. So as a naked person, we encounter with each other, right? So even the skin color, you have to take it off. Mm-hmm. So we are just life. Ham Seok-hun was thinking about the fundamental unit, basic unit. So he was thinking about life. Mm-hmm. So I mentioned about, I gave a discussion about the relationship between the concept of life and CR. It's very complicated. But I believe that the idea of life precedes the notion of CR. So CR is more practical in our conversation of this society, social problems, you know, human identity. But the Ham's notion of CR is more metaphysical. So we have to go deep down to the bottom level, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever that may be. So I think Ham shared the idea of Tolstoy. So I see a lot of similarity now. Ham actually mentioned about it too. Mm-hmm. And I see the evolution of Tolstoy's thought, right? He maybe when he was young, he was not quite religious, but he became religious now. Later age, he liberating himself from the doctrinal religions, right? He wanted to take up everything to get closer to neighbors, right? Mm-hmm. The human beings and even the spirit, the divine. And Ham did the same way. Ham, when he was young, he loved Christianity. Before Christianity, he enjoyed the traditional Confucian culture, classics. But as he grew, he was exposed to different wisdoms, and he started taken up by right? Christianity, and even the nationalism, he had a great passion for, right? He worked a lot for independence, but even the idea of nationalism, he wanted to get rid of it, mm-hmm. right? So even the people's emphasis on the Minjung. Minjung is the term for the masses, the people, used in Korean liberation theologians. So the Minjun is the people, Oklus in the Book of Luke. Mm-hmm. So the kind of, you know, socially underprivileged people that need more attention in the Bible for the liberation theologians and even Korean liberation theologians. So Ham had a lot of friends with the liberation theology camp, but he said that even the idea of the Minjun, the masses, he wanted to just put down. Mm. So he wanted to be more transcendent. Mm.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, Ham uses the idea of like the clothes and taking off your clothes, and so like Sial is like naked. Mm-hmm. And I read that Ham had read Sartor Resartus by Thomas Carlyle, which I've tried to read. I cannot imagine, you know, Ham, like, he read this, and this, the whole philosophy there is like this clothes philosophy, and that clothes get worn out and we have to like put on something new because these ideologies get, you know, threadbare and so forth. And so like Sial is getting to this sort of core of life and nakedness. But you say, first of all, this is something very complex and multidimensional. And you say that it is a virtue and a character to be cultivated. So although there's this nakedness there, we have to awaken to it or return to it. Could you talk about that?
Right. The CR is can be considered a state of consciousness, right? Awareness, awakening. So we all have potentials. We all CR, by the way, right? Regardless of your professions and social status, well, doesn't matter. So we all consider CR. Ham didn't have this category for specific group people like the liberation theologians. His notion of CR is open to everyone, right? Even to the president, leader, whatever. So, but we have the potential, but we need the external artificial effort. It doesn't come naturally. So he wanted to make sure we have to work on it. So that's why he tried to create a community, CL community, CL farm villages. He wanted to try. He wanted to see how it works. He wanted to see how the idea can be translated into a practical reality. So just as you know, Gandhi's tried with the ashrams movement, and Ham wanted to try it too. He wanted to see, although if he failed, he confessed it was failure, but he wanted to do it. We have to work together. We have to work together to awaken our true nature. So that's why he was so eager to visiting as many places as possible, giving this lecture of CR to everyone.
Mm. I'm going to open it up to see if anybody has a comment, question, follow-up, thought, etc. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have, you know, I could talk about this for many hours, but I just want to make sure I understand like the etymology of the word and how it links to the idea. I heard at the beginning, you know, it's this idea of a seed. When we're thinking about it from like a philosophical frame of reference, and then from a sociological frame of reference, it's something like grassroots. Mm-hmm. And so the bridge between these ideas is something like, you know, service in a local community or someplace close to home is a path forward toward a better understanding of whatever completeness might mean in relationship to heaven, earth, and movement. Something like that.
Right. More raw state of a human community. In terms of the space and organization, he was thinking more of the natural interaction of human life, right? So we can talk about later about the micro state, not the macro level. So he envisioned a more organic interaction of the people, right? As people at the CR engage in conversation with each other, right? They build the relationship and they care each other. So the community should be less institutional, official. So that's something he wanted to see. So he didn't he was not an anarchist, right? Like Tolstoy, but he knew there's a limit to institutionalized entity in building a good sense of community. There's a limit.
And speaking of that, is there ever any conversation in his work about like when those limits have to change due to scale? Because I mean, I think that everyone can sympathize that, you know, the less government interference there is in the conversations between individuals, right, the better. But at some point when there's 100,000 people talking, obviously there has to be some kind of set of structures in order to facilitate that kind of thing. And so demarcating, you know, some kind of limits in certain places is obviously the whole complex component of civilization in the first place. And so
right.
I can see the extremes here. I'm wondering, is there any conversation in the CO philosophy about right. how to differentiate that?
What I like about Hamza Khan, he was a very humble guy, and he was very candid to his limit. He, in his writing, he often mentioned, I have failed a lot, and there's a limit to my philosophy, my thought system. He often said, I'm not quite practical, right? Because he just give philosophy to the community. But what he always said, I didn't do much for the community of Korea. He was very humble. So he realized that there's the problem in translating his CR philosophy to practical realities. So he received a lot of criticism as well. But I don't think his main concern of most of his writings were not about coming up with some practical measures and process. He focused on educating philosophy to the people. And the policymakers, inspired by his philosophy, would do something practical, I would say. So I think you mentioned, Professor May, you mentioned in the previous episode, talking about the red thread, right? Mm-hmm.
The red thread of positive history.
Relay race, right? Relay race, right?
Yes.
So I just missed what I had to say about the Hamza Khan's historical understanding. He in the history class in my college, the professor talking about Hamza Khan's historical insight, wanted to make sure I got it later in my reading. So Ham wanted to make sure we need to be limited, you know, there's something in the Bible, Hebrew Bible, Moses could do, and there's something Joshua could do. The Moses couldn't make it to the promised land, right? There's something limited to Moses. So we all are connected. So we need to know our limits. So the Hamza Khan knew his limit. He was not a policymaker. He was not an organizer. He confessed, because I'm not a good management. That's why I failed CR Farm project, actually. So he believed people inspired by CR philosophy would do it differently. So he didn't develop, articulate this practical situation much, right? And that's one thing I want to make comment on.
Thanks. Randy, did you want to?
Again, I can go for a long time. I'll limit myself to one comment. You know, we've talked about limitations for a little while here and various ways, and it's just in the spiritual context, the coolest thing possible that I've ever learned about limitations is that, you know, the one thing God is missing and therefore needs is limits. And that's the whole purpose of, you know, subjective existence. And I think that that's a really cool idea. And so I just throw that in there too.
Thanks. And Michael, anything?
Yeah, I find CL to be very interesting in two respects. The one that we've all been touching on is this like community aspect, but then it also seems to be very individualistic as well. I'm very curious as to if Hamza Khan ever talks about like developing the community within yourself, the community with yourself, or is that part of like a larger network within the community that you would form with the individuals outside of your own being?
I don't think he finished his project. Actually, he was in the process. He the CL he wanted to see the cooperations among CL members internationally. So he mentioned about the we see all the people who hit the bottom, people who suffer. We can share the experience together internationally, right? So in social status, wealth, we're different, probably. I mean, but as long as we have the similar experience, there are points we can share together. So so he encouraged, you know, international conversation with the CLs from different countries and cultures. He encouraged them. Especially he focused on the conversation on within the community in South Asia and Southeast Asia. So he talked about the conversation of the third world communities. So we have to initiate the conversation on a world peace. So usually the international conversation on human rights and justice, international justice, whatever order, they're taken care of by the people, I mean, a powerful country. But Han Suk-kun said, it's time for the the oppressed, the poor, right, the powerless to stand up. So we can communicate each other. We can set the agenda. So he promoted this idea. But 1980s, he died in 1989. It was sort of like a naive thought or idealistic thought. Not many people that listened to him probably because it's never going to happen. But 21st century, we have a great technology of social media, right? And then we have great transportation technology. We're more connected than ever before. So the people, CR, I mean, awaken to the CR nature can connect each other on the phone, I mean, internet. So we can better connect right now. We can do something about it. So Han Suk-kun's idea is relevant, I think, in this 21st century.
Yeah, I would like to add, I must confess that what I'm about to say is not well-formed in my head. And that's why I'm saying it, so that it becomes well-formed. But one of the things that I've really sort of taken from Ham's philosophy, and you mentioned, Dr. Lee, the show on March 1st that we did, and we talked about the red thread and the relay race. And that speech that that image is from, Ham gives on March 1st, 1987. And I'm pretty sure it's in that talk where, and it's also in Queen of Suffering that we've mentioned, but also in this March 1st, 1987 speech, that he talks about the importance of meaning in one's life. And the absolute essential role of history in human meaning. This is something that this sort of really was an aha moment for me when I encountered this idea that the connection between history and personal meaning. Mm. I just want to flag that. And we've been talking about, okay, well, his project is one for the oppressed. And this is like the oppressed can unite in a way. And I've mentioned, I can't help but connect these things that I'm reading in my head. So I apologize if they're not connected, but I'm making meaning, see? So again, this book by Howard Thurman, who himself did a pilgrimage to India before Martin Luther King did and came back with the Gandhian message to Martin Luther King and others. And his book is called Jesus for the Disenfranchised. And there he says that sort of the meaning of the gospel is to expose people to an idea that there's something more important than physical existence. And that's where like meaning, deep meaning is found. Like you can't find deep meaning if you're working in the realm of physical survival, mm-hmm. that it's in this other realm, and that there's sort of like a unified thread amongst people who find that who make that shift, who go from sort of physical survival to something else. And that's a sort of like, it's not the oppressed per se, but it's rather like this sort of turn towards something other than physical survival that perhaps is like all consciousness. I don't know. Anyway, yes, I just wanted to throw that in and see if you had any reactions to that.
Right. You're right. The meaning, so history can be interpreted different way, right? Depending on who the interpreter is. So Hamsa Khan's attention to the CR is effort to change the paradigm. So traditionally, Korean society history is interpreted, told by the powerful, Neo-Confucian scholars, right? Aristocrats. So we people, majority people, we illiterate, we learn from the Confucian scholars in traditional Korean society. So at the moment when Yu Yongmo started talking about the eyes of the masses at the CR, so we now they wanted to change the perspective, right? Turn how we give a perspective to the physical reality, right? Physical reality can be objective. Objectivity itself is not always unified in human minds, right? So that's why the Ham has a reservation about the reason, you know, the inordinate belief in reason by Western philosophers. Mm. So, because what make people move, there are a lot of forces within human mind and mental state, but the physical force and reason, they're important. But Tom mentioned spirituality, the feeling of transcendence is a key, but it was not considered seriously by Western philosophers, because there's a notion between religion and philosophy, and religion has some negative connotations in intellectual world in modern time. So he wanted to change that. He was not talking about doctrinal religions. He was talking more about Albert Einstein's notion of feeling of transcendence. So we'll talk about it later. So right. So the meaning making effort, that should be focused, not necessarily the social class of the oppressed. Mm.
Right. Anybody want to add to this?
Not yet.
Okay. Right. So we've been talking about Sial, what it means as a kind of like nakedness, awareness. It's something to be cultivated. Ham tried to do this following Gandhi, who also, Gandhi himself was following Tolstoy, also had like Tolstoy Farm and these experiments in living and trying to cultivate a kind of character. And this is related to this other notion that in your book you say is related to Sial. And I don't want to mispronounce it, but Sasanmyang. Yes. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Could you spell that out?
Oh, yeah. Sasanmyang.
Sasanmyang.
There we go.
Sasanmyang. Yeah. The new life. Right. So the life should be born again, right? Like a baptism experience in Christianity, right? You're born again. So the CL awakening is a new birth. So you're born again as a new person, right? Awakened to the fundamental nature of the self, the true self. You can call it Atman using Hindu philosophy, or the Buddha using Buddhist philosophy. So you really grasp the true nature of you. And Hamsa Khan wanted to see it, how it can be translated into historical practical reality. So he established the three times CL farm villages, like what Gandhi did. So he did it in 1940s, 1950s, 1960s. So he experienced the three different projects, actually. So he did 1940. So here, Sierra Farm is kind of commune, right? Commune, you gather people together who wanted to pursue a Sierra awakening. So you gather, especially young people, Ham had followers, disciples, and they just passionate about learning from Ham. So he gathered some group of people. It's not many, many people. It's more of a less than, 40 and 50. It's a small farm community he established. And they lived together, studied together, worked together, right? Mm-hmm. So as Gandhi did, the emphasis of this project is about the harmony between the body and mind. So in the morning, you actually study together, right? The Bible study is another history study, literature study, and then afternoon you engage in manual work, working on farms. So you also interact with the neighboring villages to sell and buy things, and you sort of creating independent, self-reliant community. So that's what Ham wanted to do it. So it had a great impact on those participants, young people, followers, but economically it was not successful. So he simply lamented later, because I didn't have a talent or the skills, managerial skills, right? Because he was a guru, a mentor, but he was not a good manager. So he understood it, and people still loved it. Still, they just thinking about their experiences, their disciples, they loved experiences. And it was a great experiment, right? Mm. And in the life, there's some guideline or the point of emphasis for the farm. They include the simple life, diligence, self-discipline, no smoking, drinking, spiritual attentiveness, engaging in manual work, reading, occasional visit to mountains and seas, no killing, not being in debt, protecting farm villages. So there were some principles for the students, for the participants, and they Ham wanted to build the healthy humans. Mm-hmm. Both in spirituality, intelligence, right? And also in the body too. Mm. So, this is sort of experiment, whether it can work or not in larger scale, we don't know, but it is sure it's worth it, promoting this type of ideas and practices for people. So, because anyway, it doesn't matter who you are, where you came from, you actually participating in this farm as a CR, right? Seed. Mm-hmm. So
amazing. And so coming to the end, because we've been going for almost 90 minutes, your book, the we've been focused on this one word, CL, but the other important word in the title of your book is cosmopolitan vision and cosmopolitanism. Mm-hmm. And so you argue in this book that this CL philosophy could be very helpful to cosmopolitanism in the 21st century. And so can you talk about that?
Mm-hmm. So I read the Ham's works, multiple works, I realized occasionally, not much, he talked about, he stated, I'm an citizen of the world. In Korean word, it's just 세계주의자, meaning I'm a cosmopolitan. He mentioned about it, especially later stages of his life. So he's sort of like a intellectual, intellectuality has grown, expanded further. So I think there are many different ways to approach to Ham's philosophy, but I think cosmopolitanism is an interesting paradigm, I think. So I check out the literature of cosmopolitanism. I see a lot of connection between two intellectual traditions. So I argued in my book, Ham's vision is not completely unique. I'm not saying Ham's vision is unique and it's going to fix the problems of traditional cosmopolitan theories, but I'm just saying it's going to be a great addition to the conversation of cosmopolitanism. So I just want to introduce Ham to the scholarship of cosmopolitanism. That's my intention. So I argue in my book, there are some shortcomings in cosmopolitan theories. Some of them include the idea in ancient time came from cultural dominance, right? The idea used by the expansionist, represented by Alexandria, Greek Alexander. And Greek philosopher, you can, your philosophers, you can find some Greek philosophers, right, promoting cosmopolitan nuances. In modern time, Immanuel Kant is major one, right, who laid the foundation for international effort for international peace and relationship. But I argue in my book, major arguments of cosmopolitanism based on our optimism about reason, and that's okay. But I just want to add one more element, which is spirituality. I'm not talking about here religiosity. I'm talking about the feeling of transcendence, the cultivation of character, right? So Ham would argue to to other cosmopolitan theorists that the reason is important, but reason is still subject to a division, because reason can be dominated by the powerful and the powerful voice. Thinking about the these days, the flood of fake news, right? Conflicting perspectives on the same objective facts. So our conflict doesn't usually come from the fact itself, but it's more about our approach to the fact and our articulation about the argument and our approach to intellectual approach to the reality, physical reality. Mm-hmm. So Ham thought reasoning, rationalities are good for analysis probably, or processing information, but what makes people move is not the reason. It should be something deeper. So we need to be equipped with the reason, rationality, but at the same time we need the sort of like the drive, right? Mm. So one concept I brought in the book, the idea of a multidimensionality, human nature. I translated here stereoscopic nature, which is impossible to understand, for Korean American people probably. So what I meant is 입체적 인간, meaning a multidimensional human beings. Ham specifically talked about the political reality, also our spiritual reality. They are connected. He actually. Talk about this in his Magnum Opus, right? The suffering of the queen of the suffering, and he said the if you check out the human development of human civilization, we see the development of our political skills, our development of cognitive ability, evolution of our skill sets, but at the same time you have to recognize the development of our spirituality, the feeling of transcendence, how the feeling of transcendence can be translated, right? So he wanted to pay attention to this spirituality side. So the more the deeper your spirituality may be, the better your political reality is. That's what he says. So he wanted to bring in this conversation of spirituality into this discussion of a political change and development transformations. So right now, 21st century, we can see a lot of changes. Even 21st century, how much have we changed in political reality? Our conflict, we understand each other, ability to we listen to others. I don't think it changed a lot, right? So there's something missing. So Ham said maybe we have to go back to inner world, right? Internal cultivation of human beings. That should be taught in public education, private educations. It needs more attention from the people, political leaders. So you can't just say, hey, talk about the spirituality, feeling of transcendence, it's just a religious subject. So it's an optional. Ham would say it's not an optional thing. It's connected. To fully understand the development of human civilization, we have to consider the interaction between the political reality, also the development of our spirituality. So he wanted to push the idea of CR into these conversations.
Mm. Yeah, I mean that, you know, that makes total sense. I mean, I think I kind of understand the notion of stereoscopic, although it did, I must confess it, I had to read your book two times to fully grasp it. But as I understand
I got the criticism from the scholars, you know, in one conference, you know, we don't get it. What does it mean, stereoscopic? So I would say, yeah, multidimensional.
Yeah, and the idea, as I understand it, and I think that this is what you were saying, that there's two aspects to our evolution, and they're tied into each other. And so one is this sort of like this going inward and going deeper. And again, I think like what I got from your book is that this has to do with an expanded sense of belonging. And as the, you know, mm-hmm. the species evolves, our sense of belonging and to what we belong is getting wider and wider. And that expanding sense of belonging and that like deeper spirituality and so forth translates into a different political framework, a different normative framework for us. And so these two things are connected. Does that sound?
Yeah, am I kind that's of getting probably it? Experience, right? In evangelical spirituality, the way we interact with the people, we're just, you know, it represents, right? Theology is manifest in political reality. So, right. So, but I don't want to say this is religiosity, but he wanted to go deeper than religiosity.
Mm. Yeah, and just again, like this for Americans in particular, you know, the social movements in this country have been so influenced by spirituality. Mm-hmm. So we've been talking about Quakers, and, you know, Quakers are always behind some of the most important changes in society. Right. The women's suffrage movement in particular, Susan B. Anthony was a Quaker, Alice Paul was a Quaker. The civil rights movement we've talked about, and this is something that we don't pay enough attention to, in my mm-hmm. view. And so, cool. Randy, any follow-up thoughts here? We're going to be winding down if we can. Yeah.
Sure. So one of the things that stuck out for me during the conversation about the communes was that there was this common emphasis or common goal around an experience of awakening. That was something that was kind of, it wasn't necessarily the main thing, but it was certainly part of the community. And I've always been fascinated because those kinds of experiences get frequently referred to as like a death rebirth kind of moment, this death rebirth kind of model that seems to pervade all, and it seems to be involved in basically all the various traditions that I'm aware of, whether they're religious or just, you know, spiritual or, you know, whatever label we want to use. Connecting with the transcendent involves some kind of death. Mm. And I really love that. There's this connection. And so, you know, Hope just mentioned Quakers, and there's this nonviolence bottom line going on at the same time as this obvious demolition going on. And there's an interesting contrast here that, it's always interesting to me, and I'm bringing it up now, which is kind of at the limit of my own knowledge for, you know, exploring the idea. But I really love how the people who outwardly are doing, like, consciously as little harm as they possibly can, are at the same time consciously going inward and looking for things that don't support the transcendental elements of life and removing them. And sometimes that's an active force, and sometimes it's painful. And it's like this willingness to go and do that internal warfare that seems to be taken to this extreme level when it comes to the people leading the political movements, like Hamsa Khan or Susan B. Anthony. You know, these two extremely influential figures politically seem to have done this unbelievable amount of internal destruction mm-hmm. to purify, right? I think, and that's why the purity motif is also mm-hmm. cross spiritual traditions. So I don't know, I just bundled a whole bunch of things together and probably wasn't coherent, but this idea of awakening inside of the communes and the association between that and like a death rebirth motif triggered all that for me.
Thanks. So our last bit is, and we referred to it before, so we've been talking about Hom's notion of cosmopolitanism and how this, the idea of see all and transcendence rather than reason can ground and inform contemporary discussions of cosmopolitanism. But interestingly, as you said earlier, Dr. Lee, like this, the idea of statism and the mega state is something that Hom rejects, and he's advocating more of a micro statism and this sort of these smaller specific communities. And can you just say a little bit more about that?
Right. As I said, Hom didn't develop a lot of practical path toward the building a cosmopolitan community. But obviously, occasionally he mentioned about the, uniting among the oppressed and the CR internationally. So he wanted the CR to share their stories and memories, share memories, and he believed it has power, right? The people at the bottom of the society, they can't exercise as powerful force as the other, people with the power. But he obviously saw the historical examples. In Korean history, if you go back the 18th century, before the modern time, Korea had a serious pageant revolutions. The most representative example would be a Donghak revolutions, inspired by this the dispelling of transcendence, religiosity, but there were pageant revolutions. And if you check out the Korean history, you always encounter with the uprising of the masses and the powerless, right? So they shape the our directions, very importantly. So March First Movement, another example, and after the Korean War, the first government was corrupt, and we had April 19 revolution led by the student activism, also the civilians, and 1980s Gwangju Democratization Movement massacre happened. That was led by the people, citizens, ordinary people. And most recent example could be the candlelight protest, 2017, I think. The President Park was impeached for her corruptions. So it was impeachment done through the public request and demonstrations, peaceful demonstrations, the people's cooperations, fight. So they don't make laws, they don't lead the political organizations, mm-hmm. but people can voice. It happens everywhere. I mean, you mentioned about the Martin Luther King, the movement, the messages he delivered to the community. I don't think he did a lot on creating policies, right? But he create ideas and values, right? He pointing to directions for the people. And he inspired them. And so Hom imagined that kind of movement of ideology and thoughts, right? So the practical side is missing side for Hom Seok-hwan, because Hom Seok-hwan was not a politician, political lawmakers, and he was a guru and mentor. And he inspired the people to do something for the CR, with the CR. But I don't see much practical action Hom engaged in changing political reactions. Maybe there are good researchers out there, but I'm still learning. Probably I can bring more example in next conversation somewhere. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's something I want to explore further. And Hom Seok-hwan, something Hom Seok-hwan lamented in his later stages. He said, "I just, you know, created ideology and thought and inspired many thoughts, but I don't think I did practically anything specific." That's what he said, actually.
Wow.
Right, so that's the area I want to explore more later. And but he specifically mentioned cooperation, uniting of the masses, the CL of the third world countries immediately. Mm-hmm. So we gotta take the initiative in leading the international conversation about the economic disparity and then social injustice, everything. So we led by the powerful, especially Westerners, the countries of the North. Now it's time for us to voice up. That's what he said.
But this happens in, you know, smaller communities. Is that, I mean, although there has to be this unified effort of all people, really it's like they do this sort of at a more local grassroots level, or... Yeah, I'm just trying to connect that idea with this idea on the importance of, like, we don't want the mega state.
Right. So I think he like Tolstoy's case may be different, but CL, I don't think he would argue to the extent that the state should disappear or something like that. He understands reality, right? He even said this, you know, in some neighboring countries attacked us, we got to arm ourselves. That's what he said. He was not he's a pacifist, but he was at the same time a realist. So his understanding pacifism should be explored further, because when someone asked, you know, in special lecture, you know, if the North Korea attacked you, what would you do? He said, we gotta prepare, we gotta fight, you know. So the qualification of his pacifism need further study, I think.
Yeah, and I do remember reading somewhere that he does say that the United Nations is sort of like like it's a good thing. And the United Nations, of course, embraces the norm of self-defense. So yeah, it's not a completely pacifist framework. Yeah, that would be wonderful to do further explanation of the details of Hamm's pacifism. We've talked on this show a lot about this person, Bertha von Suttner, who was the first woman to win the Nobel Peace Prize. And she's not a total pacifist in the sense that she does not think that you should not resist attacks, and that we should not sit by while we watch other people being harmed. So it's a different, there's different degrees of pacifism indeed. Okay, well, we've been going for over 90 minutes. And so now's the time where we'll just sort of sum up our final thoughts and then say goodbye for now for this really interesting conversation about Hamsak Han. And so Randy, if it's okay, we'll start with you, then I'll go, and then Dr. Lee, you'll have the last word. Michael
sure.
has had to go to class, so.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Randy.
So what I'll end with is just drawing people's attention to the fact that, you know, we routinely on the show talk about the power of the individual and the degree to which a single person given enough moral energy, given enough will, can transform themselves and become a massive influencer on the global stage, or certainly in the national stage anyway. And so, you know, we talked about names like Tolstoy and Hamsak Khan and Gandhi and Bertha von Suttner and Susan B. Anthony, and we listed off these heavy hitters. And I just want to make sure anybody who's, you know, learning about Hamsak Khan for the first time today to understand that he's in the same league with all the other enormous names that we've heard so much about, but for some reason his name is potentially absent, and there's a reason for that. There's a story behind that, and it's all worth exploring. So that's all.
Thanks. And I'll just add, you know, this repeating what we've said earlier and what you talked about earlier, Dr. Lee, is that, you know, the sort of the insufficiency of reason, whatever that is, that involves its own conversation, but that there's something else that's equally even more important than that. And like, what do we call that? Like the will to connect, the will to transcend, this will to create a revolution in yourself and your consciousness. And that's really the driver, and that needs to be given more attention to as we discuss moving forward and cosmopolitanism and belonging. And I just again want to underscore the that this thread of this leitmotif in your book about belonging, and how if you look at human history, there is this evolution of this sense of what we're connected to. And that's a really important thing to take hold of. And so I encourage all people to look at Dr. Lee's book, as well as there's an article that you wrote on a similar idea. And that's linked on our show resources page at virtuesofpeace.com. And you can download that for free. So I direct our listeners to the resources on our show resources page and encourage you to check those out, as well as the very few things that Hom has written and have been translated into English. So hopefully we'll be doing more translations into English. So, and Dr. Lee, leave you with the last word.
Right. It's a real blessing to share the story and philosophy of Hom Sok. Thank you so much for your invitations. I personally hope that my book would make a small contribution to enriching our conversation on how to build a larger sense of community, such as cosmopolitan community or global community. So I look forward to seeing more creative ideas and strategies and actions to love better and get along better with each other. So thank you so much. I'll definitely be a new fan of your podcast.
And we'd love to have you back at a later date. There's so much more to talk about. And so for now, we'll leave it there. And you've been listening to Virtues of Peace, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Have a great evening, everyone. Bye-bye.